Blog Talk Radio.
It's 3 p.m., and I have a question for you. Do you know where your politicians are? Everything is political in your life, from the moment you're born to the moment you die. And when a politician tells you that's not true, look in your pocket. You'll find their hand in it. Everything is political. We will be talking to those politicians that are working for you and talking about those politicians that are working against you. Just because they're a Democrat, or just because they're a Republican, and you voted that way your entire life, maybe you were wrong. Because everybody is not what they seem to be. However, there are a few out there who are working for your benefit, and we are going to bring them to you. We're going to let you hear them. We're going to ask them questions. We're going to let you ask them questions. And we're going to be discussing education system, the military, science, music, sports, oh, and healthcare. Do you have it? Do you need it? Are your 26-year-olds still on the family health care plan? Or, as the regressive party says, Obamacare. We will bring you what you need to know, because this is the last word. And everything, from the cities, counties, state, nation, the entire world. So sit down and get a pencil, paper, and take this graduate education experience. And we will make sure that you have the last word. My name is Michael Lawson.
The weather, of course, when it's in season.
Now, Marce, I need some ideas if I'm going to get your town out of the serious trouble it's in.
River City ain't in any trouble.
But then I have to create some. Must create a desperate need in your town for a boys' band. So why does everybody keep rubbering into the billiard parlor?
Oh, they just got in a new pool table.
They must have seen a pool table before.
No, just billiards.
That'll do it. You just sit where you are, and remember, if you see that music teacher...
Are you Mr. Dunlop?
Yeah?
Well, either you're closing your eyes to a situation you do not wish to acknowledge, or you are not aware of the caliber of disaster indicated by the presence of a pool table in your community. Well, you got trouble, my friend. Right here, I say trouble right here in River City. Why, sure, I'm a billiard player. Certainly mighty proud to say I'm always mighty proud to say it. I consider that the hours I spend with a cue in my hand are golden. Help me cultivate horse sense and a cool head and a keen eye. Did you ever take and try to give an ironclad leave to yourself from a three-rail billiard shot? But just as I say it takes judgment, brains, and maturity to score in a bop-line game, I say that any boob can take and shove a ball in a pocket. And I call that sloth the first big step on the road to the depths of degradation. I say first, medicinal wine from a teaspoon, then beer from a bottle. And the next thing you know, your son is playing for money in a pinchback suit. And listening to some big out-of-town Jasper, hearing him tell about horse race gambling. Not a wholesome trotting race, no, but a race where they set down right on the horse. Like to see some stuck-up jockey boy setting on Dan Patch? Make your blood boil, well, I should say. Now, friends, let me tell you what I mean. You got one, two, three, four, five, six pockets in a table. Pockets that mark the difference between a gentleman and a bum, with a capital B, and that rhymes with P, and that stands for pool. And all week long, your River City youth will be frittering away, I say, late, your young men will be frittering. Frittering away there noontime, supper time, chore time too. Get the ball in the pocket. Never mind getting dandelions pulled or the screen door patched or the beefsteak pounded. Never mind pumping any water till your parents are caught with a cistern empty on a Saturday night, and that's trouble. Yes, you got lots and lots of trouble. I'm thinking of the kids in the Knickerbocker, shirt-tail young ones, peeking in the pool hall window after school. You got trouble, folks, right here in River City. Trouble with the T, and that rhymes with P, and that stands for pool. Now, I know all you folks are the right kind of parents. I'm going to be perfectly frank. Would you like to know what kind of conversation goes on while they're loafing around that hall? They've been trying out Bevo, trying out Cubabs, trying out TaylorMade's like cigarette fiends, and bragging all about how they're going to cover up a telltale breath with Sansan one fine night. They leave the pool hall, heading for the dance at the armory, libertine men and scarlet women, and ragtime, shameless music that'll grab your son, your daughter, with the arms of a jungle, animal instinct, masteria. Friends, the idle brain is the devil's playground. Trouble!
Oh, yes, oh.
Right here in River City.
Right
with a capital T, and that rhymes with P, and that stands for pool.
We
surely got trouble.
We got trouble.
Right here in River City. Got to figure out a way to keep the young ones moral after school. Mothers of River City, heed that warning before it's too late. Watch for the telltale signs of corruption. The minute your son leaves the house, does he rebuckle his knickerbockers below the knee? Is there a nicotine stain on his index finger? A dime novel hidden in the corn crib? Is he starting to memorize jokes from Cap'n Billy's whiz-bang? Are certain words creeping into his conversation? Words like swell. Aha, and so's your old man. But if so, my friends, you got trouble.
Oh, yeah.
City. With a capital T, and that rhymes with P, and that stands for pool. We've surely got trouble. Right here in River City.
Right here.
Remember the main Plymouth Rock and the Golden Rule.
Oh,
we got trouble. We're in terrible, terrible trouble. That game with the 15 numbered balls is the devil's tool.
Oh,
yes, we got trouble, trouble, trouble.
Oh, yes, we got trouble.
With a T.
By River City. What's the story here? This is December the 10th. Whoops. What's going on here? Who's dialing me? I'm not dialing. Doesn't cancel. Okay. Now, right here in River City. Now, I was not ready to jump on that, but since they, I'm going to play that again. I like that. You got trouble right here, River City? S stands for P-O-O-L stands for pool. Right here, River City? S stands for P.
Well, when it's the weather, of course. When it's in season.
Now, Mars, I need some ideas. If I'm going to get your town out of the serious trouble it's in.
River City ain't in any trouble.
We're going to have to create some. Must create a desperate need in your town for a boys' band. So why does everybody keep rubbering into the billiard parlor?
Oh, they just got in a new pool table.
They must have seen a pool table before.
No, just billiards.
That'll do it. You just sit where you are, and remember, if you see that music teacher... Are you Mr. Dunlop?
Yeah? Well, either you're closing your eyes to a situation you do not wish to acknowledge, or you are not aware of the caliber of disaster indicated by the presence of a pool table in your community. Well, you got trouble, my friend. Right here, I say trouble right here in River City. Why, sure, I'm a billionaire. Certainly mighty proud to say I'm always mighty proud to say it. I consider that the hours I spend with a cue in my hand are golden. Help me cultivate horse sense and a cool head and a keen eye. Did you ever take and try to give an ironclad leave to yourself from a three-rail billiard shot? But just as I say it takes judgment, brains, and maturity to score in a bop-line game, I say that any boob can take and shove a ball in a pocket. And I call that sloth the first big step on the road to the depths of degradation. I say first, medicinal wine from a teaspoon, then beer from a bottle. And the next thing you know, your son is playing for money in a pinchback suit. And listening to some big out-of-town Jasper, hearing him tell about horse race gambling. Not a wholesome trotting race, no, but a race where they set down right on the horse. Like to see some stuck-up jockey boy setting on Dan Patch? Make your blood boil, well, I should say. Now, friends, let me tell you what I mean. You got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 pockets in a table. Pockets that mark the difference between a gentleman and a bum, with a capital B, and that rhymes with P, and that stands for pool. And all week long, your River City youth will be frittering away. I say your young men will be frittering. Frittering away there noontime, supper time, chore time too. Get the ball in the pocket. Never mind getting dandelions pulled or the screen door patched or the beefsteak pounded. Never mind pumping any water till your parents are caught with a cistern empty on a Saturday night, and that's trouble. Yes, you got lots and lots of trouble. I'm thinking of the kids in the Knickerbocker, shirt tail young ones, peeking in the pool hall window after school. You got trouble, folks, right here in River City. Trouble with a capital T, and that rhymes with P, and that stands for pool. Now, I know all you folks are the right kind of parents. I'm going to be perfectly frank. Would you like to know what kind of conversation goes on while they're loafing around that hall? They were trying out Bevo, trying out Cubabs, trying out TaylorMade's like cigarette fiends, and bragging all about how they're going to cover up a telltale breath with sense. And one fine night, they leave the pool hall, heading for the dance at the armory. Libertine men and scarlet women and ragtime, shameless music that'll grab your son, your daughter, with the arms of a jungle, animal instinct, masteria. Friends, the idle brain is the devil's playground. Trouble!
Oh, yes, oh.
Right here in River City.
Right
with a capital T, and that rhymes with P, and that stands for pool.
We've
surely got trouble. Right here in River City.
Right.
Gotta figure out a way to keep the young ones moral after school. Mothers of River City, heed that warning before it's too late. Watch for the telltale signs of corruption. The minute your son leaves the house, does he rebuckle his knickerbockers below the knee? Is there a nicotine stain on his index finger? A dime novel hidden in the corn crib? Is he starting to memorize jokes from Cap'n Billy's whiz-bang? Are certain words creeping into his conversation? Words like swell. Aha! And so's your old man. But if so, my friends, trouble.
Oh, yes,
right here in River City.
Right here in
with a capital T, and that rhymes with P, and that stands for pool.
That stands for pool.
We surely got trouble.
We surely have
right here in River City.
Right here.
Remember the Maine, Plymouth Rock, and the Golden Rule.
Right,
oh, we got trouble. We're in terrible, terrible trouble. That game with the 15 numbered balls is the devil's tool.
Devil's
tool. Oh, yes, we got trouble, trouble, trouble.
Oh, yes, we got trouble. We got big, big trouble.
With a T.
With a capital T.
Stands for pool. Remember, my friends, listen to me because I passed this way but once.
All right, I was getting ready to cut that off. I still didn't find out what happened. This is Michael Lawson, and this is The Last Word. In everything, and it is, as I said before, December the 10th, 2021. And I wanted to say a few things about, before we start the show. You remember that this is the 80th now. 80th anniversary of Pearl Harbor, December 7th, 1941, a date that would live in infamy. You know what? My youngest grandson, He's not in school yet. He's in kindergarten. But my middle grandson is just starting to learn about this. And we learned about this when I was in the fifth grade. I mean, I don't understand what the hell the story is here. Why have we not heard about December 7th, 1941? We can name these people. They don't know. What the hell has happened in since the computers came in? We got to teach all these people. They have to learn everything that came before us, plus everything that came after us. And that's a whole new generation. Radio. Hello, guest.
Hello. Hello, Michael. How are you?
How are you? What's
you know
going
me,
on?
I think we, listen, I think we dropped, we got dropped last Friday. And so I'm delighted that you agreed to have me back on again this Friday.
You can come on every week to promote this. You can come on every week and this needs to be promoted.
Because you have always, of course, been on the front lines of promoting and advocating that our community, especially marginalized populations and underserved populations, have access to information about programs and services that are designed to meet their needs. And of course, right now, the reason I am here on your show is to promote the open enrollment period for the ACA or Obamacare, right? And it started on November 1st and goes to January the 15th, and it is so important for people to know. That's a relatively short window. If people don't know that this is an opportunity for them to apply for the first time or maybe even reapply if they currently receive Obamacare, because the new law, the American Rescue Plan, has shored up the law such that quality health coverage is more affordable and accessible and accessible than it has been before. Okay? So
yes, I mean, they because before, some people couldn't get it because they were making like $1.50 over the limit.
Yes. Well, now with the
new law,
exactly. Mm-hmm. So now the prices, the premium prices are lower and more people qualify. So people need to, they can go online to healthcare.gov or they can actually call a toll-free number, which is 1-800-318-2596. And they can get more information about, and they can basically explore the marketplace. And then look at plans, look at the various plans that are offered by private companies and look to see what insurance, health insurance options best meet their needs.
Mm-hmm. And so, can they, the 1-800-318-2596, that will be a live operator or agent they can speak to?
Well, they can call that number. That's the call center. So they'll be able to talk to someone.
Good. Oh, good. Very good. See, that will be a live operator you can speak to, ladies and gentlemen. And why? Let me ask you a question first. Why do people get confused between Obamacare and what is the real name of the health care plan?
It is the Patient Protection Affordable Care Act. Okay, that is.
Well, why
do
people
get
confused when you say Obamacare? But no, I don't want that. I want Obamacare.
Well, that's because it was named that because, of course, it was the signature legislation that the Obama administration was able to get through, and President Obama went into office with health care being a key issue for him. He campaigned on that.
Right.
And so he and the administration and the Congress passed that major legislation that no other administration had done that kind of major change since President who?
Roosevelt, probably.
Yes, Roosevelt. And because that's when we first got like Social Security and those and health care that was associated with Social Security back then. And so this was huge to get this through. And so now people have the opportunity to go online at healthcare.gov and look at the marketplace, healthcare marketplace, and look at the different plans to see which insurance plan might best meet their needs, and then be covered. Now, if they apply, Michael, before the 15th of this month or by the 15th of this month, and they qualify, then they will, their benefits will be effective January 1 of 2022. If they apply after the 15th of this month, but by the 15th of January and they qualify, then their coverage will commence February 1. So we're trying to encourage as many people as possible to go ahead and apply for the first time, or if they are currently receiving Obamacare, they might want to reapply to see if they might not be, they might not qualify for more benefits and more services, than they currently have at a lower premium.
Right. Well, they, now suppose they are only, if they're working part-time, can they still apply?
I'm uncertain about that. That's a very good question, but this is what I would say. I would say to anyone who needs care, I mean, who needs health care, whether they're part-time or unemployed, they should go and apply. They'll let them know whether they qualify or not. So there's no harm in going ahead and applying, whatever your situation is, to see if you qualify. They'll let people know whether they qualify for what they qualify for. Because, see, a lot of people may be between, they may be in transition, they might be unemployed, right?
Right. Yes.
And so they should go ahead and apply.
They could be on unemployment between jobs.
Yeah. They may be self-employed, but they might be out of work right now. There may be any number of possibilities for a person's circumstance. If they are uninsured, if they're uninsured or underinsured, they are encouraged to go and apply.
Right.
And a determination will be made as to whether they qualify or not. And of course, that is not my role. I'm not an insurance agent. I'm not setting people up for the coverage. My role as a boots on the ground is what we're called. By the way, I didn't mention my name, Wilhelmina Rembert. I'm a boots on the ground representative for an organization called Integrated Management Strategies, and they are doing this work under a contract with the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, or CMS. And so in my role as a boots on the ground representative, I am basically trying to get the word out and trying to get people like yourself to serve as champions for coverage. We call you champions for coverage because you're willing to represent, or you're willing to promote open enrollment periods so that people who might be underrepresented or underinsured or uninsured will have the information so they can go to the health insurance marketplace and see if they qualify for health insurance.
Right. You know, there are so many, there are so many people out there who don't know that they can get this. All you need to do is ask. You don't cry before you ask. Cry after you ask. But ask. You don't know unless you ask.
Well, sometimes
I used to tell the kids in my class, when I was teaching school, I used to tell the kids in class, look, hey, yes, ma'am. Go ahead.
Okay, but Michael, sometimes we don't know, people don't know what they don't know. And so there are people, particularly in certain groups, in certain communities, in certain rural areas, in some rural areas. That's not to say that's the case all over the place, but in many communities, people just don't know. And we want to try to make sure that more people are aware of this opportunity, and they exercise it before the open enrollment period ends on January the 15th of 2022.
Right. Well, you know, the thing is, though, but just because you live in a rural area, I used a long time, right? I used to work at Wall Street, and part of my portfolio is to, was to sell insurance besides benefits in the stock market and whatnot. And you'll be surprised, people who make thousands and thousands of dollars a week, they did not know that they could have insurance because they never asked. They were walking around, mm-hmm. let me get some, can I get insurance? What do you mean, can you get insurance? Did you ever try? No, you're making enough money. This was back in the 70s. So I'm talking about New York City. So they didn't know, why is it going to be somebody that lives out, got a farm in West Texas? Why are they going to be any different? They're not going to be any different. You need to ask. If you don't ask, you don't receive. Period. End of story.
That often is the case. Well, I want your listeners to know about this open enrollment period and encourage them to apply or reapply if this is a need for them. But if they know someone who might be in need of health care coverage and don't have it, encourage them to share the word, to spread the word that the open enrollment period is right now through January the 15th of 2022. They can apply or reapply to see what they qualify for, and know that if they apply by December 15th and they qualify, their coverage will be effective January 1 of 2022. If it's after the 15th but by the 15th of January and they qualify, the coverage will be effective February 1st. And if they have questions, they can go to the numbers that I gave you. But if they have questions that they want to ask me, if people maybe locally in the Charlotte area want to contact me, they can call me at my number, and that's 980-297-3826. And again, I am not signing people up per se, but I can get them connected with someone we call a navigator who is a licensed insurance broker who can help them actually get signed up.
Absolutely. And ladies and gentlemen, all you need to do is call 1-800-318-2596 to find out whether or not you can get Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act, as it's known in the House and the Senate. Ask. All you have to do is ask someone, and you can find out a lot of things. And you can call, if you're here in the Charlotte area, you can call Wilhelmina Rembrandt. Wilhelmina Rembrandt is right here at 980-297-3826. And she could steer you in the right direction.
I will certainly do my best to help people get connected.
Absolutely. I think Wilhelmina, this is great.
I
will talk about it before I end the show today also.
Okay. Thank you so much, Michael, for all you do to make sure that our community stays connected, stays engaged. You take care now.
Thank you, Wilhelmina. All right, ladies and gentlemen, you just heard it from Wilhelmina Rembert. If you don't have insurance, you don't have to know. All you got to do is ask, and you can call 1-800-318-2596 to find out if you can get the Affordable Care Act. Maybe you were turned down before. This is another day now. They have increased the reason why you can get it. Paul, if you're in the Charlotte area and you don't know, and you want to speak to someone, you go Wilhelmina Rembert at 980-297-3826. That's 980-297-3826. And Wilhelmina will direct you the best way to get involved with the Affordable Care Act. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that's it. I'll talk about this a little bit later before the show ends. And ladies and gentlemen, as I was saying before, we can't forget this week, December 7th, 1941, a date that will live in infamy. That's the date, ladies and gentlemen, that will live in infamy. And we have to remember, I don't understand why it's not taught in school anymore. You know, since we had the computers come in, I can't blame the computers because you have still learned about the computers. You still have to learn about them. So I can't blame the computers. Computers don't have anything to do with this. And but I was asking my grandson about that, Blake, and he said, well, you know, they feel that since we have the computers, we can always look up the answer. But that means if you don't know where to look for, just like if you don't have health insurance, how do you know where to look for? Well, I just gave you the answer for health insurance. 1-800-318-2596. You can get the direction here in Charlotte at 90-297-3826 and speak to Wilhelmina Rembert. She will lead you in the right direction. People, they were saying, the people in the people that were, what were they saying? The people who were in school, kids in school now, don't know that they can do this. They don't know that there is a place where they can go and look up stuff. I have my grandson here, and we're sitting in the kitchen one time as he came home from school, waiting for his mother to get so she could take him the heck out of here. I mean, he's here at my house more than he's at his own house. Eats me out of house and home, but that's all right. He was just a little kid. Now he's a big kid. Anyway, there was questions I was asking about World War II. We learned about that when I was in the fifth grade. He's in the eighth grade now. He's just starting to learn about it. So I don't understand why it's that way. I really don't understand that. I really do not understand why. And he tells me that his teachers tell them, if you want to know, look it up. No, look it up. That's nonsense. I mean, so look it up. I'm not going to look it up. So the thing is that another call and say spam call. I'm so sick of these spam calls. I don't know what to do. Anyway, there are so many things that we're missing, I feel, in the world today as far as what they should know at a certain age. I know they have to teach the computers. I know they teach other things now in class that we didn't learn. But I don't know when to learn what I learned. Because when he comes in and I have him sometimes before his mother gets there, and the other times she takes him home, and I'm saying, how come we don't have a he was learning, what was he learning? He was learning about the Greeks and Aristotle and all the things that we learned about Ulysses we went into them in detail. They don't go into them in detail. It bothers me that they don't learn what we knew, what we learned.
in school. And they're learning it, but when are they learning it? That's the thing. But getting back to let me get this on here. What am I doing here? I'm trying to get this right here. Okay. No, I erased the whole thing. Let me get this right. I'm trying to put something in the computer. See, I'm trying to use the computer here. Well, I'm telling you, we didn't have to do this when I was in school. But see, he says, that's all we have to do is look this stuff up now. But all right, what I'm going to do is, since this is the week of D-Day started, when we actually went into the war, even though we had troops over there before them fighting, I want to give a little taste of what it was like at the start of World War II to D-Day. This is a great presentation. I'd love you to listen. Thank you very much.
I am speaking to you from the cabinet room at 10 Downing Street. This morning, the British ambassador in Berlin handed the German government a final note stating that unless we heard from them by 11 o'clock, that they were prepared at once to withdraw their troops from Poland, a state of war would exist between us. I have to tell you now that no such undertaking has been received, and that consequently this country is at war with Germany. You can imagine what a bitter blow it is to me that all my long struggle to win peace has failed. Yet I cannot believe that there is anything more or anything different that I could have done and that would have been more successful. Up to the very last, it would have been quite possible to have arranged a peaceful and honorable settlement between Germany and Poland. But Hitler would not have it. He had evidently made up his mind to attack Poland whatever happened. And although he now says he put forward reasonable proposals which were rejected by the Poles, that is not a true statement. The proposals were never shown to the Poles, nor to us. And though they were announced in the German broadcast on Thursday night, Hitler did not wait to hear comments on them, but ordered his troops to cross the Polish frontier the next morning. His action shows convincingly that there is no chance of expecting that this man will ever give up his practice of using force to gain his will. He can only be stopped by force. And we in France are today, in fulfillment of our obligations, going to the aid of Poland, who is so bravely resisting this wicked and unprovoked attack upon her people. We have a clear conscience. We have done all that any country could do to establish peace. But a situation in which no word given by Germany's ruler could be trusted, and no people or country could feel itself safe, had become intolerable. And now that we have resolved to finish it, I know that you will all play your part with calmness and courage.
On Friday evening last, I received His Majesty's commission to form a new administration. It was the evident wish and will of Parliament and the nation that this should be conceived on the broadest possible basis, and that it should include all parties, both those who supported the late government and also the parties of the opposition. I have completed the most important part of this task. A war cabinet has been formed of 5 members, representing with the Liberal opposition the unity of the nation. The 3 party leaders have agreed to serve either in the War Cabinet or in high executive office. The three fighting services have been filled. It was necessary that this should be done in one single day, on account of the extreme urgency and rigor of events. Sir, to form an administration of this scale and complexity is a serious undertaking in itself. But it must be remembered that we are in the preliminary stage of one of the greatest battles in history, that we are in action at many points in Norway and in Holland, that we have to be prepared in the Mediterranean, that the air battle is continuous, and that many preparations have to be made here at home. In this crisis, I hope I may be pardoned if I do not address the House at any length today. I hope that any of my friends and colleagues or former colleagues who are affected by the political reconstruction will make all allowances for any lack of ceremony with which it has been necessary to act. I would say to the House, as I said to those who have joined the government, I have nothing to offer but blood, toil, tears, and sweat. We have before us an ordeal of the most grievous kind. We have before us many, many long months of struggle and of suffering. You ask, what is our policy? I will say, it is to wage war by sea, land, and air, with all our might and with all the strength that God can give us, to wage war against a monstrous tyranny never surpassed in the dark and lamentable catalogue of human crime. That is our policy. You ask, what is our aim? I can answer in one word, victory. Victory at all costs. Victory in spite of all terror. Victory however long and hard the road may be. For without victory there is no survival. Let that be realized. No survival for the British Empire. No survival for all that the British Empire stood for. No survival for the urge and impulse of the ages that mankind will move forward towards its goal. But I take up my task with buoyancy and hope. I feel sure that our cause will not be suffered to fail among men. At this time, I feel entitled to claim the aid of all. And I say, come then, let us go forward together with our united strength. What General Weygand has called the Battle of France is over. The Battle of Britain is about to begin. Upon this battle depends the survival of Christian civilization. Upon it depends our own British life and the long continuity of our institutions and our empire. The whole fury and might of the enemy must very soon be turned on us. Hitler knows that he will have to break us in this island or lose the war. If we can stand up to him, all Europe may be freed, and the life of the world may move forward into broad, sunlit uplands. But if we fail, then the whole world, including the United States, including all that we have known and cared for, will sink into the abyss of a new dark age, made more sinister and perhaps more protracted by the lights of perverted science. Let us therefore brace ourselves to our duty. So bear ourselves that if the British Empire and its commonwealths last for 1,000 years, men will still say, this was their finest hour. When Napoleon lay at Boulogne for a year with his flat-bottomed boats and his grand army, he was told by someone, there are bitter weeds in England. There are certainly a great many more of them since the British expeditionary force returned. Sir, I have myself full confidence that if all do their duty, if nothing is neglected, and if the best arrangements are made, as they are being made, we shall prove ourselves once more able to defend our island home, to ride out the storm of war, and to outlive the menace of tyranny, if necessary for years, if necessary alone. At any rate, that is what we are going to try to do. That is the resolve of His Majesty's government, every man of them. That is the will of Parliament and the nation, the British Empire and the French Republic, linked together in their cause and in their need, will defend to the death their native soil, aiding each other like good comrades to the utmost of their strength. We shall go on to the end. We shall fight in France. We shall fight on the seas and oceans. We shall fight with growing confidence and growing strength in the air. We shall defend our island, whatever the cost may be. We shall fight on the beaches. We shall fight on the landing grounds. We shall fight in the fields and in the streets. We shall fight in the hills. We shall never surrender. And if, which I do not for a moment believe, this island or a large part of it were subjugated and starving, then our empire beyond the seas, armed and guarded by the British fleet, would carry on the struggle until, in God's good time, the new world, with all its power and might, steps forth to the rescue and the liberation of the old. Great air battle, which had been in progress over this island for the last few weeks, has recently attained a high intensity. It is too soon to attempt to assign limits either to its scale or to its duration. We must certainly expect that greater efforts will be made by the enemy than any he has put forth. Hostile airfields are still being developed in France and the Low Countries, and the movement of squadrons and material for attacking us is still proceeding. It is quite plain, sir, that Herr Hitler could not admit defeat in his air attack on Great Britain without sustaining most serious injury. If, after all his boastings and blood-curdling threats and lurid accounts trumpeted round the world of the damage he had inflicted, of the vast numbers of our air force he has shot down, so he says, with so little loss to himself, if after tales of the panic-stricken British crushed in their holes, cursing the plutocratic Parliament which has led them to such a plight, if after all this his whole air onslaught were forced after a while tamely to peter out, the Führer's reputation for veracity of statement might be seriously impugned. We may be sure, therefore, that he will continue, as long as he has the strength to do so, and as long as any preoccupations he may have in respect of the Russian Air Force allow him to do so. On the other hand, the conditions and course of the fighting have so far been favorable to us. I told the House 2 months ago that whereas in France our fighter aircraft were wont to inflict a loss of 2 or 3 to 1 upon the Germans, and in the fighting at Dunkirk, which was a kind of no man's land, a loss of about 3 or 4 to 1, we expected that in an attack on this island we should achieve a larger ratio. This has certainly come true. It must also be remembered that all the enemy machines and pilots which are shot down over our island or over the seas which surround it are either destroyed or captured. Whereas a considerable proportion of our machines and also of our pilots are saved and soon again, in many cases, come into action. The gratitude of every home in our island, in our empire, and indeed throughout the world, except in the abodes of the guilty, goes out to the British airmen who, undaunted by odds, unwearied in their constant challenge and mortal danger, are turning the tide of the world war by their prowess and by their devotion. Never in the field of human conflict was so much owed by so many to so few.
Many American-owned ships have been sunk on the high seas. We have wished to avoid shooting, but the shooting has started, and history has recorded who fired the first shot. In the long run, however, all that will matter is who fired the last shot. Hitler has often protested that his plans for conquest do not extend across the Atlantic Ocean, but his submarines and radars prove otherwise. And so does the entire design of his new world order. For example, I have in my possession a secret map made in Germany by Hitler's government, by the planners of the New World Order. It is a map of South America and a part of Central America as Hitler proposes to reorganize it. Today in this area, there are 14 separate countries. But the geographical experts in Berlin have ruthlessly obliterated all existing boundary lines. They have divided South America into five vassal states, bringing the whole continent under their domination. And they have also so arranged it that the territory of one of these new puppet states includes the Republic of Panama and our great lifeline, the Panama Canal. That map, my friends, makes clear the Nazi design not only against South America, but against the United States as well. Nobody who admires qualities of courage and endurance can fail to be stirred by the full-fledged resistance of the Russian people. Russia needs all kinds of help. The needs of her huge armies will continue, and our help and British help will also continue. That is his plan. It will never go into effect.
Senators and representatives, I have the distinguished honor of presenting the President of the United States.
Mr. Vice President, Mr. Speaker, members of the Senate and of the House of Representatives, yesterday, December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy, the United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan. The United States was at peace with that nation, and at the solicitation of Japan, was still in conversation with its government and its emperor, looking toward the maintenance of peace in the Pacific. The attack yesterday on the Hawaiian Islands has caused severe damage to American naval and military forces. I regret to tell you that very many American lives have been lost. In addition, American ships have been reported torpedoed on the high seas between San Francisco and Honolulu. As Commander-in-Chief of the Army and Navy, I have directed that all measures be taken for our defense. But always will our whole nation remember the character of the onslaught against us. No matter how long it may take us to overcome this premeditated invasion, the American people in their righteous might will win through to absolute victory. I believe that I interpret the will of the Congress and of the people when I assert that we will not only defend ourselves to the uttermost, but will make it very certain that this form of treachery shall never again endanger us. Hostilities exist. There is no blinking at the fact that our people, our territory, and our interests are in grave danger. With confidence in our armed forces, with the unbounding determination of our people, we will gain the inevitable triumph. So help us God. I ask that the Congress declare that since the unprovoked and dastardly attack by Japan on Sunday, December 7th, 1941, a state of war has existed between the United States and the Japanese Empire.
Here, cut off from the whole thing by a layer of clouds. All I can see are a few ships shooting like mad at something. But the mist is closing in again.
Above the English Channel, Bert Stiles strains to survey the scenes on the beaches below.
There's not a speck of flak. I guess all the flak guns are leveled, waiting for our guys on the ground.
Soldiers, sailors, and airmen of the Allied Expeditionary Force, you are about to embark upon the great crusade toward which we have striven these many months. The eyes of the world are upon you. The hopes and prayers of liberty-loving people everywhere march with you. You will bring about the destruction of the German war machine, the elimination of Nazi tyranny over the oppressed peoples of Europe, and security for ourselves in a free world. Your task will not be an easy one. Your enemy is well trained, well equipped, and battle-hardened. he will fight savagely. Together to victory. I have full confidence in your courage, devotion to duty, and skill in battle. We will accept nothing less than full victory.
Yahoo, and we'll be doing the show on Yahoo, probably also with Live Talk Radio, but we will gradually lessen the show on Live Talk Radio because we'll have the ability to do the show anytime we want, and it's going to be a real I believe it's going to be you'll hear a lot more than you would be able to hear on this show. And I want to now just go into this one. We're going to steer away because we have a guest coming up. But I want to hear this one bit that was Stephen Colbert talked about the other day.
Going in for surgery, and the doctors say, do we validate parking? I wouldn't worry about that. Just leave the keys with the nurse. Speaking of catastrophes, there's news about California representative and goldfish watching you have sex.
Devin Nunes. Yesterday, Nunes announced he's leaving Congress by the end of the year. But they're so happy for him. They're happy for him, you know? That's good. He's back. He won't be out of a job thanks to former President Dolt 45 because Nunes has been named the CEO of the former president's new media company despite having no apparent prior experience working in the tech industry or as an executive. Instead, Nunes is a former dairy farmer. Well, then he's the perfect guy to make money off the old president because he has experience milking things with leathery skin. Nunes
Nunes does have one bit of history with social media. He once sued Twitter over an account purporting to be Nunes's cow. It's a true story. So what happened was somebody started a Twitter feed called Devin Nunes's cow. And this cow said negative things about Devin Nunes. Like he's a bad farmer and stuff like that. So Nunes sued Twitter for $250 million for defamation. The case was, of course, dismissed. And we still don't know who is behind the cow Twitter account. All we know is that it's someone smarter than Devin Nunes. So probably a cow. Now, usually... Now, usually, when the former president appoints someone who is grossly incompetent to an important position, he has a good reason. They're related to him. That means the only reason Nunes got this gig is because Jared, Don Jr., and Eric all turned it down. Sorry, Dad, no can do. That job is beneath me, but I'd still like to be considered for the role of chief executive hug receiver. Bring it in. Bring it in, Dad. Let the healing begin. Even if you didn't catch it, this pandemic has been bad for your health because a new study has found that from 2019 to 2020, average blood pressure readings increased. Well, yeah. For some reason, we were all a little on edge last year. In fact, here's some footage of my most recent blood pressure test.
You know, I didn't have my mic on, but I think you might have heard me. Good afternoon. We're on the left coast right now, and we're talking to our chief executive on the left coast, Mr. Michael Evans. How art thou, Mr. Evans?
Good afternoon. Doing well. Unfortunately,
well.
I don't have
doing a lot better now.
President to hire me as a CEO.
But you're going to be doing a lot better now. You're going to find out things that you didn't know. Because this guy is going to be gone, and you're going to find out a lot. You know, you always take the covers. Or when you go to a hotel, no matter if it's the Ritz or the Waldorf, always remove the top two covers. Because you never know what's crawling around in the bed. I learned that from old lady. Matter of fact, old lady, my daughter. We went to, I don't remember what hotel it was. It was an expensive hotel in Charleston. We were visiting that. It was my wife's mother was having her 90th birthday party. So they went in their bed, happened to open up the sheets, and there was these things crawling around in there. Oh, my God, she screamed and called me. And said, what are you calling me for? I'm not going to change the sheets. So she called them, and they were so old. They gave us our rooms for free. All of us. We had six rooms free. And they changed them all. Anyway, what you're going to find out now that he's leaving, you better get some spray because there's going to be a lot of stuff crawling around that you didn't know he was doing. Do you have anybody?
Well,
I'm sure you must have somebody to run for that spot.
Oh, yeah, there's no shortage of people that have expressed an interest in the seat. But it's rather peculiar because it's really two different elections. There'll be one election, a special election, to fill the remainder of his seat in the district with the current lines that he is serving in. And then concurrently, there'll be an election for the new seat for which the person elected will start in January of 2023. And that district, at least with the current visualizations, appears like it will be friendlier to a Democrat than the current Nunes seat.
Ah. So if we get that seat, and we get the seat, we maintain the seats down in Georgia, we might not lose the House. Huh.
Well, it depends on whether you get a net gain statewide, because the redistricting also puts the Josh Harder seat in peril. He's a Democrat from the northern Central Valley. So net effect might only be to keep the remaining number of Democrats, although there does appear to be more seats that are in play than is typically been the case in the past.
Okay. Well, so now the Republicans that are running for that seat, there must be 1,000 of them, right?
Well, so far there's two that have announced. One is Andreas Borges. He's gone up the Republican ladder. He was a Fresno City Council member. Then he was a Fresno County Supervisor, the equivalent of the East Coast County Commission. And he's currently serving in the state Senate. So in terms of progression, he would be the logical choice. But even though he's right-wing, he's not a nutcase right-winger. So that might deter him somewhat with the Republican base. The other Republican that is already announced is Nathan Magzig. He's currently on the Fresno County Board of Supervisors. He's a slick talker. He's basically a Trumper, but he tries to present as something else.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess that's the modern way of doing it. Nobody can be a Trumper and act like a Trumper and get elected, I don't believe. They're going to be a Trumper, but they're going to be slick with it, try to get elected. So is this guy slick enough to get elected?
Well, he's currently, his board supervisor's district is solidly Republican. So he's never really had a serious challenger. In fact, I don't know if he's ever had a Democratic challenger. So, before that, he was on the Clovis City Council, which is a very conservative city. Right now, all five of their council members are Republican. So he's never really been put to the test. But just to give you an indication of how odd he is, when citizen groups went before our Board of Supervisors to discuss the redistricting, the new maps that they were considering, everybody who spoke at that particular meeting was from community-based groups. And once they were finished speaking, Supervisor Magzig asked, completely straight-faced, he said, "Well, did you invite people with an opposing opinion to attend this meeting as well?" Like it was somehow the community's responsibility to do that. Yeah.
I mean, and did they say a no or yes? Or what are you asking that stupid question for?
Right. Well, one of the problems with public comment is that you get to make your statement, and then when the body replies to whatever you said, you do not have the equivalent opportunity to respond. So that's very frustrating. You know, they can stand up there and call you a horse's ass if they want, and there's nothing you can do at that point.
Uh-huh. Well, the thing is, now, where is that in California?
So this is Fresno County, which is literally the center of
Fresno,
California.
Okay. Right, okay. Now, how far are you away from George Air Force Base? That's in the Mojave Desert, well, I guess, you know.
From the desert, we're about 4 hours, 4 or 5 hours.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's Bakersfield.
2 hours from Bakersfield, and then it's another hour and a half from Bakersfield to the desert.
Right. Okay, so Orange County is between the desert and the desert,
which county?
And Bakersfield, correct? Orange County?
No. So Orange County is on the coast. There's the most southernmost county is San Diego, and then just north of San Diego is Orange, and then north of Orange is Los Angeles.
Okay. So what's the county
in Los Angeles County? Just a completely different animal. There's 87
right.
incorporated cities.
Right. Well, in Ohio, how far are you away from Victorville then?
Victor, that's in the far north, right?
No, that's near the desert.
Well,
that's
the
Georgia
sure.
Air Force Station. Okay,
because yeah.
I know we used to go from Orange, Victorville, and I thought it was Orange County to, and then to Los Angeles.
It's probably Riverside.
Riverside, that's correct. That's right, Riverside. Riverside. So how far are you from Riverside?
Yeah, so Riverside is just east of Orange County. So we're
right.
about 3.5 hours from there.
Okay, well, Riverside is about an hour or so, hour and a half from Victorville.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so all right. All right, but anyway, the reason why I was asking is because that, is that a, towards Victorville, is that a, when I was there, they had 17 people and 10 of them were dogs. That's how long ago I was down there. I mean, I had nothing in Victorville. And I was on a bus sleeping from Riverside or Orange County, I think. We got on the bus. It was like 75 degrees. It was February the 7th or something like that. I fell asleep. Oh, it's a three-hour ride. So we went to sleep, woke up. I couldn't see outside because it had 3 inches of snow on the ground. What the hell is this? Just like 35 degrees. I'm out there with fatigues on, just the fatigues. They're going to the bar and they're coming to pick you up. I mean, I was just, hey, I studied Southern California. Give me a break. So now, is that more, has that gone Democratic? Or is that, I know Orange County is Republican, right?
Orange County is now Democratic, and at one point, all of their congressional representatives had turned to Democrat. I think we lost one of those in the last election. But registration-wise, it's now Democratic.
How about Riverside?
Riverside, I believe, is trending Democratic. I don't have those numbers in front of me. I know we do have an active Democratic Party there.
But I know when I was there in 67, it was all, 66, I should say, it was all Republican. I mean,
so most of the areas around the military bases are still quite Republican.
Well, so... Now,
but recently I've been doing some research on Kern County, and Kern County has Edwards Air Force Base and China Lake, and that whole section of the county is very Republican. In fact, Kern's almost like two counties. You've got that whole military aspect on the east side, and then you've got your oil and ag interest on the west side.
Mm-hmm. Well, when I was there, Victorville, and we're talking about 67, Victorville is the one, that was the TAC, almost TAC headquarters back there. That's where the training facility was for the Phantom 2 F4. And Edwards was still using all the old aircraft. So on the base, we seem to have a lot of Democrats. And they were shocked to see how many Republicans were in that small little one-bar town, Victorville. And of course, that Riverside was made really, really Republican. Orange County was really Republican. So you had to fight your way through the mess to get to California. And I was wondering if that was ever going to change. And now it has. So I am, thank you, Victorville. You guys did a good job. What I want to say now is, what about your other friend, Mr. Rudy Giuliani, who claims that he has over 900 death certificates on hand to prove that thousands of dead people voted in the election.
Well, yeah, where's the proof? And he says he has the...
He has
them
in his head. He says, however, Giuliani has not produced the evidence.
You know, didn't Joseph McCarthy say that too?
Yes, he did. And where's Joseph McCarthy now? Oh, you know, he's been long dead. But he drank himself to death, and they threw his butt out. But Giuliani's lost his license now in New York and in Washington. So he can say whatever he wants now. He ain't going to lose nothing. Unless he had a license someplace else in Wyoming. And I think Ms. Cheney will take care of that. He loses his license there. But what do you say about these people that, like Lindell and Giuliani, who were respected people, and they've gone off this deep end saying they have this and this and this, and when they get to court, they don't have anything. They don't have nothing. How, from your point of view, how have we gone this far into the darkness? How have we gone this far? I mean, I don't understand.
Well, I wish I could explain it. I mean, in terms of Giuliani and the people of that ilk, I think to them, you know, they like being in the limelight. You know, they like that riding the Trump train keeps them, you know, somehow credible with the Republican base. But, you know, the Republican Party has just been moving in this direction for quite some time. And actually, it really shouldn't surprise anyone. If you look at the direction they have moved since the election of Ronald Reagan in 1980, I mean, this is really just the logical conclusion of it. Where else was it going to go? And I think Trump might have gotten them to this point faster than they would have otherwise. But, you know, now they're a party that doesn't care about science, doesn't care about facts, doesn't care about democracy. They care about keeping a small group of people in power. And for a base that largely doesn't benefit from that at all from those people being in power. So in terms of understanding it, it's almost impossible.
Well, but see, the thing is that, well, why do these people still go that way when they know they will not have anything? I mean, why are they still going?
Well, I mean, part of it's the scare tactics, the fear, you know, that the other, usually meaning people of color, will take your job, take your culture, take your society away from you. With some, it's abortion, you know, the religious right. But, you know, they definitely use dog whistles, no question about that.
Well, but the thing is that they don't have it's already too late for that. By 2050, there'll be a minority party in this country, and there's nothing they can do about it.
Well, of course, that's the logical viewpoint, but, you know, they look at South Africa and see that, you know, it's possible to still govern in that circumstance.
Yes, but they only govern for a few short years.
Well, never count on the right to be farsighted.
I just don't understand
why people can go around and think about things that will never, ever, ever happen and still believe it. I mean, I don't understand why people can go around, see for your own eyes, as Trump said, as he told these people time and time again, don't believe it because you see it. Don't believe what you see with your lying eyes. I mean, I don't understand. How do people believe something like that when they're told that and they don't? They just, you know, I don't know. I don't know. Let's see. I'm looking this thing up right here right now. Oh, it's two of them. That's no good. I want to know why people won't believe their lying eyes. I don't understand. I don't understand it at all. I mean
that's a good question.
Don't believe your lying eyes. Believe me.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, and then the thing is, believe me what I'm saying, but the problem is that then he changes his mind. Then he changes his mind. So I don't understand why this will ever be a change here. I don't believe it. If you can look at something and he'll tell you, look at it, you know that it's black, and he tells you that it's white, why would you believe it? Why do you believe what you're seeing is not true? Why do you believe what you're hearing is not true?
Well, I think you're right that it's not going to change, but I think this will become an increasingly smaller segment of the population. I mean, right now it seems to be close to 50%. I don't think that's sustainable long term.
Of course not. It doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he says, because you see it, if I don't tell you that it's not true, I mean, this is what Hitler told all his characters in Germany. Don't believe it because you see it. If I don't tell you it's not true, then it's not true.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, is that, are these people so innocent? Why are they grabbing for straws? Why do people grab for straws? Why do they grab for straws? And, I mean, we know that they need something that they can't find. They want something that they can't believe. And there was one thing that it wasn't President Biden. It was Tom Hanks said that he had a quote from Bob Dole, and the quote was, never stop reaching. Never tell yourself to stop reaching because you'll never know when you reach it. Well, here's the thing that, what, just like this fool, Ted Cruz, he was the only physical person at the memorial, at the church today, that did not wear a mask.
Mm-hmm.
Can you believe that? He did not wear
a
mask.
Ted Cruz. So, yeah.
Ted Cruz. Now, first of all, how did he even get in there without a mask on? They let him in.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now, if you keep letting people cross lines, and you know that it's wrong, we know this, so that he's trying to make a statement. There's a lot of ways you can make statements. You can make statements by saying something. But when you're going to infect, just like his second father did, the orange man who was in the White House for years, for 4 years, he infected at least 300 people himself. I don't know how many people died. We had over 800 people who died in the last year because of this clown who was in the White House, because he didn't wear his mask.
And exposing to people once he knew he had COVID. Now, that story in and of itself goes to show how incredible this devotion is to him, that people can hear the true story of him exposing people, knowing full well that he had the virus, and even making his inferiors, I guess, handle his luggage for him, knowing they were that he was directly giving them the virus.
Correct.
And people still back him. I mean, how do you get there? I don't know how a person gets to that point in life.
And so, but aren't they the people that Jim Jones killed? Aren't they the same type of person that Jim Jones killed or told to drink the poison and die? Because you can't tell me those
who are susceptible.
No,
I mean, you know, he actually had a fairly liberal congregation, but I mean, it's obviously people that are willing to accept something at face value, even though everything about it says that you shouldn't.
Well, the thing is, it don't matter whether you're liberal or conservative. It's the mindset. So what kind of mindset is this? That people will go ahead and and here's the thing. Amy Coney Barrett has 7 children. All 7 of her children and her husband were there when she was congratulated and presented by the president to the audience outside. What did he say? Hey, don't worry, we're outside. I'm not going to be contagious. But she walked in, and all her children were in the White House, inside the White House,
mm-hmm.
infecting the whole White House. They knew this man. He was very, very, very much involved. He had the virus very, very badly. He almost died. This is what we're hearing, because this is what his chief of staff is saying in the book he just wrote, that he almost died. He was on oxygen, and they didn't think he was going to make it. So that's why he's mad at him. Trump was mad at him, and that's why he turned around now and says, look, I don't want to talk. I'm not going to the committee meeting. I'm not going to do it. That's why he didn't die now. After he turned over 6,000 pages. I mean, what mm-hmm. else can he tell them that they don't already know?
Mm-hmm.
He can't tell them anything that he don't already know. So him by him saying, I'm not giving you anything else, idiotic. So this is what we say. These are the people who are sitting in the White House of the United States of America, guarding this country. These are the people who are supposed to be protecting us. They weren't protecting us. They couldn't, because they don't know that they can die because they were around this man. And that they believe that, hey, we ain't done that. We'll just get a little cold. Come on. Why were all these other people dying? Yes, a lot of them had other things wrong with them, which contributed to their death. Contributed. That's the word, the optimum word.
Mm-hmm.
They could be sick with something else, but this man helped them go over the edge. And they just ignore it like it's nothing. I mean, I just don't understand what what this is all about. Now, what is your plan out there in California? Because we know this dominated by the Democratic Party. But there are certain places. How much can California contribute if they get more Democrat elected officials out there? How can they contribute to the House? And I think we can lose 5 in the House. Is that what it is? 5 seats?
Yeah. So, historically, the party out of power does considerably better in midterm elections. And the last two, the two under Obama, which were 2010 and 2014, the national trend was very much in that direction. You know, the Republicans did extremely well. But in both of those years, that wasn't the case in California. And California bucked the trend in both of those cycles. So, you know, we'd be looking to try and do that again. And, you know, I mean, if we could increase, it's probably not realistic to increase our number of Democrats in Congress by more than one because we're also losing a seat overall.
Right.
But if we could do that, that would probably be our effort or our contribution to the national trend. But in terms of electing Democrats throughout the state, that's still very much needed in many parts of the state. For example, in the Central Valley, Central San Joaquin Valley, which is where Fresno County is located, there are 8 counties in the Central Valley. In each of those, the Board of Supervisors, or the equivalent to a county commission, each have 5 members. And in each of those 8 counties, there are four white men and 1 Latina or Latino on each of them. Even though all 6 of the counties have a Latino majority and all of the counties have a Latino plurality. So even though California is a bastion of Democrats, that's largely reflected on the coast and going into Sacramento. So work still needs to be done in places like the Central Valley. But, you know, there is a substantial Latino population in the Central Valley, more of whom are eligible to vote each cycle. And the redistricting battle, citizens groups were out in force, and there are a number of groups willing to challenge county redistricting maps if they are not, do not provide Latino citizen voting age population districts. So we're looking for that to improve. Go ahead.
How much do you think you, how much could you keep, could you get 5 seats out of that whole area?
Congressional seats? There was one proposal that the Mexican American Legal Defense Fund put forward, which would have created 5 Latino majority districts in the Central Valley. That's probably not going to be what they end up going with, the commission that makes the decision. There'll probably be 3 or 4, but there's definitely an opportunity to pick up a seat in the Central Valley.
Okay, so you're talking about just 1 seat. We need...
Yeah.
Do you think it's a possibility that we'll lose 5 seats?
Nationally?
Nationally.
Oh, it's a virtual certainty if we don't pass the Build Back Better Act and the Voter Protection Act.
Oh, okay. Well, you know what Paul Weinrich said? Just listen to him.
Now, many of our Christians have what I call the goo-goo syndrome. Good government. They want everybody to vote. I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
Now, that was said 25 years ago, and they mean it. They don't want more people to vote because there are more Democrats than Republicans. Anyway, so they're trying to, I think it was 4 million more Hispanic and African Americans that went, and I think it's, I don't want to say, it might be Southern Texas, Southwest Texas, 4 million, which could create 4 seats or more. And what they did was, since they controlled the state, they carved those seats, all the smithereens, where there is no representation of Hispanics or African Americans. But they created right. 2 seats for the Republicans. Now, how the hell can that be allowed? See, with the Voter Rights Act, they could never do that.
Right. And, I mean, there's no question the gerrymandering's gotten much worse. There was, I saw a truly frightening statistic yesterday that said that the states that have implemented an independent redistricting commission are probably costing Democrats, it was either 10 seats or 15 seats nationwide. When you look at the redistricting is still done through the legislature by Republican legislatures, so mm-hmm. they've created a huge advantage, and because everybody's not on an independent commission, the Republicans get another gain from some states being fair and them not being fair. So. It's just, you know, everything we do in our society just seems to play into Republicans' hands, and even structural things like the filibuster and, you know, this nonsense of needing 60 votes to do anything when Democrats are in Congress.
Right.
We need to move beyond all that.
Well, the thing is, though, do you believe that if they take over in 2024, or even if they take over in 2022, that Mitch McConnell will kill the 60-vote rule?
Yeah, you know, it never seems to come up when Republicans are in power. But if there's something he wants to pass, he'll just get rid of it. But, you know, realistically, it's 2 years before they can actually pass anything because Biden will still be president. So no matter what a Republican Congress does, it's not going to get signed into law as long as Biden's president.
Okay. But the thing is, though, yeah, but then all the judges and we have people that Biden can't even, which I don't understand why Biden can't put these people in place because of the Senate rules. He has a load of people that don't have jobs in the Defense Department, don't have jobs
throughout government because they require approval.
Right.
So, and this is something that really came to the forefront in the Trump administration, and that is that the sort of guiding principles and rules that have just been accepted by everyone throughout history are now completely ignored. So
right.
they now have to be codified so that they can't be further abused. And we haven't seen the Biden administration really go after that yet. I mean, I think they should try and do everything that is legally possible for them to do without going through Congress. And then he's got to solve, you know, his Senate problem, which is getting Steve Van Zandt of the E Street Band has referred to as the Benedict Arnold twins on board. I mean, we have 50 votes in the Senate. We should have 50 votes in the Senate. And that means every part of Biden's agenda should go through. Nobody in the House is holding it up. It's two people in the Senate. So, you know, we should be able to get rid of the filibuster, which is wrong no matter who's in power. And we need to start passing legislation that's going to move the country forward. And if we already passed the Build Back Better Act and the Voter Protection Bill, people wouldn't be talking about the Democrats losing Congress next year.
Well, that's absolutely
And once we, get into January, if these aren't already passed, they're done. They're not going to pass those in an election year.
That's right. Absolutely correct. And that's what Kristen Sinema and her boyfriend are looking to do, because they don't want to put their foot in the water. They want to play both sides of the fence.
Well, Sinema increasingly wants to play the wrong side of the fence. I think Manchin, you're right. I think he wants to play both sides of the fence, and I think he loves the attention he's getting. But you know, regardless of what he does, he is not going to win re-election in West Virginia. So he should just do the right thing and take the $300,000 a year lobbying job when he gets out of Congress and feel good about his life. But he doesn't seem inclined to do that.
So you don't think he's going to win next year?
No.
And why is that?
I mean, well, to Republicans, you know, he's completely out of touch.
Yeah.
And to Democrats, he's
completely
out of touch. So where's his base of support?
Yeah, where's his base of support? And I don't think that Trump likes him too bad, too easy. So you're right. He doesn't have well, that's another. And I see, I have a next door neighbor here that we've talked about before, Ned, who is a girlfriend is from West Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
And she is just as backward as can be. Backward. Never got Ned is very. He's everything's radioactive to him. If he don't get a shot for going out in the street every day, then hey, he don't feel safe. And he didn't go see her for a whole year because she would not get a shot and wouldn't wear a mask. And then she got COVID. He said, "Well, it's just like a cold." That's what she said. So he didn't see her for a year, but she didn't die. She's one of those that didn't die. But her father came down there because she was very sick. But anyway, the thing is that, which I don't understand why the father is not that way, but she is. She got radicalized.
Mm-hmm.
But she's not radical. She just believes in what Trump says. And the father is completely different. Her father is completely different. But she's very nice. We laugh and talk all the time before she had COVID. But she hasn't been to my house since that COVID. I used to come over with Ned sometimes. But the thing is that, again, we have people who do not follow easy peasy thing. Why they, every time I wear my mask, I don't care. All the time. I went to IHOP the other day because my grandkids love IHOP.
Mm-hmm.
Half the people in there were wearing masks, half weren't. Of course, you didn't wear a mask when you ate. But I just don't understand. What's the mentality here? What? And they say, I'm just so fed up wearing a mask. What do you mean fed up? I don't understand. I don't know, in Asia, they still wear them. The bomb was dropped in 1945. I mean, I don't understand it. What makes it so difficult to wear a mask when you know you could get sick? I don't understand it.
Yeah. You know, and to make a political statement out of something that is basically protecting you and, more important, protecting others is
just nuts.
But
are they making a political statement? Who are they making this political statement to? They're not going to any meetings. They're not going around saying,
well,
I'm not wearing it. I mean, I don't understand. Who are they making? If they were going to, like, the fool Cruz, if he wants it, he made this statement because I'm going to be the only one out of mask. You know why? Because all those people there, they already got the shot. So I don't have to be afraid of getting it. But see, that's so dumb and stupid because they can be carriers and you still can get it. That's what the people don't understand. Just because the people are wearing a mask, that don't mean they don't have it. They can have it, but it's not affecting them in any big way because they got their shots and is looking to jump off of someone who doesn't have a shot. This is what these people don't understand. They say, well, they change their mind so often. We had to get one. They said we had two. Then we had to say we had a booster. And the overcome said we might have to have a fourth shot. Well, so what? It's not costing them a dime. I have one of my daughters. She has two grandchildren I have from her. Two boys. One is 15 and one is 5, 6. Her and her husband got shots. The 6-year-old got all these shots. Maybe he got a shot yet. I said, well, what's the story of that? What the? I don't think you got yours. What do you mean? He can't get his? Well, I haven't had time working every day. What do you mean? You can get to any drugstore. Call up and say, when do you got the shots? I'll go there. Your mother, my wife, gives out shots. She's going today. She gives out Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Or she doesn't give shots all day. Nurses. They want all nurses that can give out shots to come work for them. And they go all across the county here.
Right.
And so she's got no excuse why the baby can't get a shot. Oh, I just haven't had time. Haven't had time? I mean, I don't understand it. Sure, you'll be the first one crying if the baby ever got, God forbid, got the COVID. If he got a slight cold, you call me, oh, you got a cold, woman, take him to the damn doctor. What do you mean, what are you going to do? I mean, this is so brain dead. I don't understand it. I don't understand. Is being brain dead catching? Can you catch it like you catch a cold? I mean, I don't understand it.
You know, that's a good question. I wonder if we can get a mask that would prevent the spread of that.
I don't know. What are you going to do? You have all these people that, now listen, my other daughter, please forget it. She said, she wants to ask my wife, do they have any more shots out there that I can get? And the other one, look at that, they didn't any shots. I mean, I don't understand. These are two kids in the same family. What the hell's the story here? But yet, this is how it is. And what are we going to do when all we have is people that don't believe us? We had this, there's an ex-DC Guard official, an Army officer, who said that he just issued a 36 memo written by Colonel Earl Matthews, who calls General Charles Flynn. We know who Charles Flynn is, the brother of the person who should be in jail, General Flynn, and Lieutenant General Walker Pate, absolutely unmitigated liars. Because they characterized the Congress at January 6th, including how they responded to the police to deploy the D.C. National Guard. Those two people were the ones that controlled it, and they did not say yes. And he was he's not in the, so they can't control him, he's not in the military anymore. But he was the man in charge. He was the lawyer in charge. He ripped into the Pentagon's inspector general. And he says that when they wrote a letter, I believe it was in November, that the top army officials who argued against sending National Guard troops to the Capitol on January 6th delayed, and the insurrection responded for hours, that we didn't know, and we didn't believe that anything that political was going on. And he wants them to retract detail the events that Politico wrote in their article. He called the Pentagon's watchdog's memo inaccurate and sloppy work. And the Army General Charles Flynn and Lieutenant General Walter Pate as liars for failing to tell the real story and tried to cover it up. Now, what do you do when you have people like this who are saying things like this? What do you do? I mean, we have to search everything and get rid of these people. Absolutely.
You know, we have to hold them accountable, but Trumpism is allowing it to flourish. And the fact that Trump is not in jail, and I don't think currently is even in a criminal court.
We need to make sure that, see, we need to talk about this because the Attorney General of New York has him in a civil court now where he has to appear. And it's civil. It's not criminal. But so the thing is that he can't be sent to jail. But if he lies, the criminal court in New York City can use what he said in the civil court. I didn't think they could, but they can use it. So he can be caught. He can be caught in the lying portion as a criminal offense.
Until he's held accountable, then the public perception is going to be what he's doing isn't wrong.
That's right. That's absolutely correct. So, I only got 2 hours here, so we got another two minutes. Here's the thing. Because of the Attorney General of New York isn't playing around, she got Mr. Cuomo, she would definitely get him because she said she was elected to get at Mr. Trump's finances, which he has closed his school, he has closed his slush fund, and now this is after his business, and she will close this because he's caught either way. If he doesn't come and plead the Fifth Amendment, he can't do that. It doesn't affect the same thing in a civil case. It only affects the criminal case. But if he pleads the Fifth Amendment in the civil case, they can use everything that he did not say. And all the papers that they got from him, they can use that in the criminal case, and he's dead meat. So that's the story with that. And we are going down to 30 seconds, and I will ask you to give us another call on what is happening down in your neck of the woods next week.
So once we know what the new districts look like, we should have another discussion.
When do you think you know that?
Certainly by the 27th, but probably earlier.
Okay. Well, it was great talking to you, Mr. Evans, on the left coast.
Enjoyed it. You have a good weekend.
You have a great weekend also. All right, everybody.
All right. Thank you.
It's time for us to leave. It's time for us to leave. Yes, sir. One more time. Let's go out with Prince here.
Yeah. Thank you.